back in 1848, when they found gold in California, dreamers packed up their things, hopped on the trails, and headed west. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, our guests say we're in the middle of a modern-day gold rush for glittering mobile apps. And believe it or not, KC is home to one of the highest densities of app makers per square mile of any city in the country. We're home to the makers behind the Ebony and Atlantic Magazine apps, Forever 21 and Pizza Hut apps, Sporting KC, and the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum apps. Today on the show, we'll hear about how KC is mining and selling shovels here in the Silicon Prairie Gold Rush of 2012. Who needs California? We've got our own activity. That's ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Maybe you already knew about the barbecue and about the jazz, the number of fountains, and the copious amount of highway miles that distinguish our metro. But did you know that Kansas City is one of the highest-ranking cities in the United States for app creators per square mile, giving rise to the term among some local tech boosters of Silicon Prairie? This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and we're about to find out why KC is the best place to be an app creation and developer, and what it may mean for the overall scope of technology entrepreneurship in the region. This is part two of 2.0, shall I say, of a week of app discussions. We had the computer guys in on Monday talking about some of the pervasive and intrusive natures of app developments and the permissions that they require. Today, we're going to talk about app development and app creation. So first off, our guests are Kirk Hazenhall, founder and president of RareWire, Aaron Slope, CEO of Lantern, and Jim Barnes, the chief technology officer of Moblico. These three local companies are making waves here as app developers and creators. Tell us, Aaron Slope, first off, why Kansas City is a hotbed for the creation of mobile apps.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's kind of, there's kind of a lot of development going on in the Midwest as opposed to, out in Silicon Valley because of the cost of doing development here. So there's, lower costs for your office space, for housing, for, just normal things like gas. And you mentioned the number of highway miles here. If you're sitting out in LA paying $4 or $5 a gallon, your costs for living here are a lot cheaper. So just those costs of doing development and doing business here, and as well as the cost of labor, brings down your overall cost to do development, to develop apps. And, those are universally available on platforms across the world. So,
and Jim Barnes, the presence of Sprint has a lot to do with it as well, probably.
I think so, too. Number one, you've got a major carrier here in Kansas City. And secondly, there's a lot of talent at Sprint that by the very nature of what they do, they're learning the skill sets needed to do app development. And they, in many cases, go on to, start their own companies or go work for other companies that, strictly do, app development and provide mobile solutions.
Speaking of starting your own company, that's how you started. Tell us about that journey, and then we'll go around to Kirk Hazenhall and Aaron Sloop and talk about how everybody got into apps.
Sure. So my background was at Sprint. Worked there about 9 years, specifically in the mobile space. It was in mobile advertising. Helped launch Sprint's mobile advertising platform. And roughly 4 years ago, I left with Pierre Barbeau, our CEO, who also was at Sprint. He actually launched Picture Mail. So all of those folks that use their cameras and on their phones to take pictures, that's what Pierre had launched. So we both had pretty strong mobile backgrounds at Sprint and decided to go off and do something on our own and decided to form Moblico and to provide basically mobile solutions to small, medium, large companies, anything from texting to apps to mobile web. And that's how we got started.
We'll get into some of your clientele and what you do later on in the broadcast. Meanwhile, Kirk Hazenhall, how did you found RareWire?
Yeah, I'm a co-founder of RareWire along with a guy named Matt Angel, who I worked with for the past 10 years. He's a technology genius, and he came to me with this idea. He said, hey, this new thing called the iPad's coming out, and there really isn't any software out there that makes it easy to build apps. You got to be a programmer. Flash isn't going to work on the iPad, and I think I can build a solution to make it easier. And so he built it, and I went out and took it to the market and just kind of took off from there. Went crazy.
Kirk Hazen-Saul, what is the key ingredient to making what is in the industry, the venture capital and tech industry, called the killer app? What's the key ingredient to making an app that makes an impression?
That's a tough question. I think the analogy that I talk to people about is it's almost like the early days of the internet when this idea of a website came up. And everybody started talking about, hey, we got to get a website for our company and for our church and for our little league and for our family. And so there was this initial rush, but then it eventually played out where there was good websites and there was bad websites. And it still came back to the idea and the content. And I think that's what's happening with apps, is everybody's talking about building an app. Everywhere I go, people have crazy ideas about what they could do for an app. But at the end of the day, it's still about the content and the execution of getting the app out there and spreading the word that this app exists, which is a big part of it as well.
And so what was the thinking in infusing that philosophy into the establishment and the creation of the app for The Atlantic?
The Atlantic was an interesting story. That was our first client ever.
Really?
Yeah.
You land The Atlantic right out of the door.
Number one client. When we built this platform, the low-hanging fruit in those days were publishers. All the magazines were trying to get their magazines on the iPad. And so I contacted all of them. And
just cold call.
Cold call. Never talked to any of them. I called them all. People Magazine, Sports Illustrated, you name it. A lot of them were already trying to build their own custom solution. And the email that I sent them was because my partner, Matt, had invented this platform that made it easier to build apps. The email I sent him was, you don't know me, but I assume you're trying to get your magazine on the iPad, and I'll issue you this challenge. If you send me your content, I'll show it to you as an app on the iPad in 24 hours.
Wow.
And my phone rang 5 minutes later.
That sounds like something pretty historic.
Yeah. So needless to say, we won that deal.
Did you know you were capable of doing it in 24 hours?
Yeah, because of the RareWire app creation studio and the platform that Matt invented. And so we stayed up, obviously, late that night and built it and showed it to him the next day. And we ended up winning that. And it was a basic magazine app. But then it evolved where that first year, the app of the year was an app called Flipboard, which was this news aggregator app that took off like crazy. And so the Atlantic came back to us and said, hey, we want to do more than just a magazine app. We'd like to create a news aggregator app like Flipboard, but with our own content. Can you guys do that? And we said, yeah, absolutely, we can do that. So we went and built that as kind of phase two of their app, and it expanded into an app that had 10 different feeds from various websites. It integrated with their subscriber database. It integrated with a third-party ad server. And was this incredible app that some of our top designers at RareWire, a guy named Adam Jones, designed. And to make a long story short, we won two Appy Awards for it and beat out the Rupert Murdoch's The Daily for the best iPad publishing app.
That was for The Atlantic Monthly, your first client. Cold call issued a very bold challenge, and it's something that you ended up very appy about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. What about a standalone sort of physical location, such as the Negro League Baseball Museum app you guys put together? How does that differ?
Well, one of the things that is unique about RareWire is that we've invented this platform that lets you build freeform design native apps, but you don't have to be a programmer. We built a platform that is based on XML, which simply means people with the skill set of designing, familiar with HTML, what front-end web developers can build an app with not necessarily having to know Objective-C or Xcode. And so when we moved to the crossroads, we got involved with the city and got a chance to meet with the mayor and said, hey, we want to give back and participate with what's going on in the city, and knew that the All-Star game was coming, and combined with the fact that a number of guys that work at RareWire are diehard Royals fans and baseball nuts, as am I, we came up with the idea that we wanted to build an app for the museum to help them out on All-Star Weekend and to promote the museum. And so we got involved in that and worked with the guys over there to get the content. And to be honest with you, one of the most exciting parts of it was just the idea that we were going to get to access that cool content that they have, just to get to see all the old black and white pictures and radio interviews and video clips of the old Negro Leagues Museum. So it was a treat for us.
How is the programming and development for mobile applications different from that of the traditional ones developed for PCs or for Apples or for desktop or laptop computers, the bigger hardware? How is the process different for apps?
Well, it's number one, it's you're building an application that works on a touchscreen device. So there's a lot of different and unique capabilities that don't apply to the old school laptops, that, you know, where you have to use a mouse and a keyboard to navigate. So that added functionality was part of the excitement of these touchscreen devices that first started with the phones and now into tablets.
Does it increase the difficulty of developing it or add extra components to the process?
It definitely adds extra components. It, as far as the difficulty goes, as Jim was mentioning earlier, one of the headaches for a app builder is there's different device manufacturers out there that run on different operating systems. So if you want to go build a true native app that works on an Apple device, but then also on the various Android devices, you got to be a pretty educated programmer to know all those different operating systems to write code in and to build it and make it work.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 KCUR, streaming live on the internet at kcur.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are from three local app creation and design companies making waves here in Kansas City. Kirk Hazensaw, founder and president of RareWire, Aaron Slope, CEO of Lantern, and Jim Barnes, the chief technology officer of Mobleco. For all you mobile technology savvy listeners, chime in on why you think KC is the best place to be for the next wave of technological innovation. At KCURCST is our Twitter handle. We're following tweets and also taking email comments at centralstandard@kcur.org. We already have a comment from Jerry who says, indeed, we have a pool of young and talented entrepreneurs. Again, the question of the day is, KC the perfect place to innovate when it comes to mobile apps or any other technology that you might be able to think of? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 is the number if you want to go all analog on us and contribute to the conversation in that respect. A video conference with Pee Wee Herman. How did that work out? I had to throw that one in there. You talk about a mobile app.
You know,
how did that work out?
It just kind of goes to what we were talking about earlier. There is a lot of, it's a whole new frontier of, it's a new media that's being created. So there's a million ideas out there. And through good fortune that RareWire's gotten involved with some incredibly successful people that are working with our company in a weird roundabout way, we got introduced to Pee Wee Herman, who had some ideas about wanting to build an app, and we presented our capabilities, and it turned into, he was excited enough that he said he wanted to meet us and he wanted to have a video conference with us to talk about the ideas and just get a feel for the people that we are. So we had a video conference with Pee Wee Herman, and every once in a while he would go into the character's voice, and
wow,
he was excited. Yeah, it was interesting. And the guys that work at RareWire are of the age that they grew up with them, and they are big fans, needless to say. And so they were very excited to have that.
So
that
when meeting. You're at conferences and peers and people are talking about apps, you're kind of like, yeah, we just did a conference call with Pee Wee Herman. try to top that there.
Yeah, exactly.
Aaron Slope, tell us about Lantern and what you guys do over there.
Yeah, absolutely. So we basically developed an app that gives people dozens of places to try right now all around them, all at 50% off. So we wanted to give kind of small business owners a way to market their business kind of in a different and unique way. And then we wanted to give consumers something that seemed kind of familiar. So people are still very compelled by a deal. But we think that a lot of the models out there for delivering deals now through, you know, daily deal websites, things like that, where you sign up with an email and then you get blasted deals every day to your email address. I think that model is pretty broken. And
what
so
is it?
It's just, it is basically kind of intrusive. It pushes stuff at you all the time. It just kind of becomes annoying after a while. Deals aren't really customized for you or, you know, have any context of what you like or what you want. And so we kind of saw that there's a better way to deliver that, making it cheaper and giving better control to small business owners. And then for the users and consumers out there, making it free and instant for them. So they don't have to buy any vouchers up front, and they don't have to make any, you know, any solid commitment where they're putting in their credit card number. They can just say, yeah, I want to go get that, and show up at a restaurant 5 minutes later and get that deal. And so that's really the things that we wanted to kind of tackle in that market and make that that transaction, that introduction between small businesses that are, you know, unique and local and authentic with people that are in their immediate area that may not know about them.
Speaking of which, being in that market, how are you distinguishing yourself at this early juncture from the other big players in that space, Groupon and Living Social?
Yeah.
What is your selling point?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of that traditional model. So I'll talk about it kind of two different ways. So the traditional model is the email setup. So where someone comes to a website, they sign up with their email address, and then they get push deals to that email address every day. There are literally hundreds of websites out there that do that. Groupon and Living Social are some of the most visible ones and some of the, kind of the pioneers in that market. But they've kind of branched out into doing some other things as well. But the way that we're different from kind of that model is that we don't take anybody's email address. We don't push you emails. We basically just developed an app that you can pull up wherever you're at and see things going on around you, all at 50% off. So if you want to go try a new restaurant, you want to go shopping and buy something, you want to go, you know, play a round of golf, whatever it may be, you can pull up the app and see things that are kind of immediately in your vicinity that you can go try out right now. And so that's kind of where we went to tackle kind of that problem of this kind of analog 1990s model of delivering and connecting customers, and said, let's do it in real time where people are actually at and show them things immediately around them and let them get it right now.
So it's location based.
Yeah.
Versus just dropping a new deal into your inbox every day.
Yep. Absolutely.
We're talking about mobile apps and innovation here in KC. Why do you think KC is a good place for a high tech startup? Chime in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can hit us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at KCURCST. We're following tweets and also taking email comments at centralstandard@kcur.org. Cynthia in Prairie Village, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. Listen, I am an end user. I am not a programmer. But I have a very, very, very strong idea because I am an end user. But I don't have access to a programmer to actually make the idea a reality. So two questions. How do you find the right programmer? And secondly, do your companies entertain the concept of maybe looking at an idea other than what have you built your company on that people can link a good idea to your programmers?
Can anybody address what Cynthia is talking about? A lot of app developers aren't programmers. They don't know the back-end source code, but they have a good idea about what to push out. What do you suggest, gentlemen?
Well, I think Kirk's platform is actually pretty compelling, you know, to do something that's real simple to approach. I haven't played with it a whole lot, but Kirk, I'm sure you can kind of expand on, you know, some of the capabilities of that with somebody that just has basic HTML. But, you know, for an end user, if you have a good idea, I think a lot of companies have been founded without a technical co-founder right off the bat, where somebody had a good idea. They can kind of understand the business and where they want to take that idea, and then they can go out and find a technical co-founder. And that's something that there are a lot of groups in town, you know, from KC IT Professionals, KC Next, to, you know, there's a ton of different groups here in Kansas City that kind of put together networking events and things like that where you can meet somebody that can go take your idea and make it a reality.
Kirk Hazensaw, before you answer, Cynthia, tell us a little bit about your ideas.
Don't give away secret sauce.
I mean, don't give away the secret sauce, but you're getting free advertising here. So what's your pitch? You got three mobile guys in
here? Well, here's the reality. The gas prices.
Okay.
Everyone has a cell phone.
Right.
Okay. So I've seen other programmers where they try to monitor gas prices. So why not have a connecting device where you go from point A to point B, and that information is downloaded to a software program?
That you're able to compare gas prices in the immediate vicinity?
Oh, that's one way of looking at it, yeah.
Okay. Well, I want points on your royalties if you get that idea.
Well, I want to get from your team there to connect a good idea with a company that can provide the software backup. What are the options again?
Okay, Kurt, jump in.
Sure. Well, RareWire is a great candidate for that. We've built a couple hundred apps over the past two years. For people just like you and other companies that had an idea and called us up and asked us to build an app. As well, and part of our bigger vision for our company, we've invented this secret weapon of this software platform that makes it easy for website developers who are familiar with HTML to build robust apps. And we've just launched that in beta, and it's going really well. And so there's companies in Kansas City like Wavelength Media that are becoming very successful in going out and building apps for people like you as well. So there's a number of options. I think the thing that I would challenge you on is that building the app is only part of the solution. You need to have a great plan to market the app as well. There's a million apps out there in the combined app stores. There are over a million. And so you have to have a unique plan of how people are going to find your app versus the other ones that are similar.
Well, you're absolutely right. And, Kurt, I will be in contact with you.
Thank you very much, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit more, Kurt Hazensaw, about the way your platform, the app that creates apps, works. What does it entail?
Sure. Jim can probably support some of these things that I'm going to say as well, but there's two types of apps out there today. There's native apps. Native apps are, I believe, what everyone typically wants. They reside on the device, on the hardware, and therefore they have more capabilities, access to memory management, processor, GPS functionality, so on and so forth. Quite simply, they can just do cooler things. The problem is you got to be a programmer writing code to build those. You got to build in iOS and Objective-C and Xcode for Apple. On Android, you got to know JavaScript. And so it's complicated. It's a hard problem to solve. And so if you call a recruiter today, they probably all would tell you that the single highest job in demand is an iOS developer.
Right.
It's because everyone's trying to build apps.
Right. That's the Apple operating system.
Exactly.
Right.
The other side of the fence are web apps. Web apps are easier to build because they're built in HTML5. So it takes a skill set of that web developer that's familiar with HTML and not necessarily a programmer that knows how to code. Web apps are limited, in my opinion. They have to run in a browser. So they're limited in that sense compared to what you can do with a native app, but they're easier to build. RareWire has invented a platform that we think is the best of both worlds. It's a platform that allows you to build those true native apps, but they're built in a new language that we invented that we call Wire. And Wire is an XML-based language that is free-form design and very open in nature and lets you build all the complex functionalities that you may want in a native app, but you don't have to be a programmer that knows Xcode or Objective-C. It's a guy that's a web developer. We've hired people that have never even built a website before that are building apps for our clients now. It's that easy to learn.
So you're making it open source?
No.
It's open, but you're not making it open source.
Right now, we just launched it in beta in April. We've got over 1,000 people that have signed up for accounts. And the tools, right now, everything's free during beta. But our model is that the tools will be free and that there will be a license fee per app published.
Learn now. Pay later, in other words. Speaking of different platforms, you run Lantern, Alan Slope, on the Android phone right now. Yep. But you're gearing up for the iPhone. Tell us about what you're doing in terms of crowdsourcing and looking to your audience to give you information on demand about the iPhone for the Lantern app.
Sure. So we've tried out some different things, and I think every startup does a lot of experiments, or they should be doing a lot of experiments, just testing out things that work and things that don't work. And one thing we wanted to test out, we saw on Skillshare.com, if anyone's familiar with that out there. Skillshare is basically a website that that you can go to find kind of community source classes in your city. So if you want to learn how to, you know, cook a, you know, a great steak, or you know, or you want to learn how to make a mobile app or whatever you want to do, you can go to Skillshare and you can sign up. So we saw their model of how they rolled out to all these cities, and they basically had a counter that you would go, you would select your city and you would say, hey, I want to sign up for this city. Well, they knew they had to have a density of people wanting classes and people taking classes. And so when that happens, they needed to build that density in the city before they could launch there. So they had this concept of, you know, a countdown basically for each city. And so we wanted to kind of do a play off of that. So we put a counter on our website, said we'll launch our iPhone app when we get to 3,000 people signed up with their email address. So we kind of played around with that idea a little bit. We'll see. You know, I don't know that it's done everything we wanted, but it was something that we wanted to test out and try. So
our guests are Kirk Hazensall, founder and president of RareWire, Aaron Slope, whose voice you just heard, he's the CEO of Lantern, a company that makes location-based apps, and Jim Barnes, chief technology officer of Mobleco. These are all local app creation and design companies. We're going to take a quick break, and coming up, we'll learn more about Mobleco and continue to discuss what makes Kansas City a good area to place a high-tech startup business. Speaking of which, Kansas City, why do you think your city is a good place for a high-tech startup? Chime in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can hit us on Twitter at KCURCST. We're also following tweets and taking email comments at centralstandard@kcur.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. According to mobile analytics firm MobileWalla, the total count for apps worldwide eclipsed 1 million last year and is rapidly heading to 2 million with new apps being created every day. VentureBeat, a publication tracking tech entrepreneurship and startup funding, has listed Kansas City as one of the largest app-creating metros areas in the country, in the same league as San Francisco, New York, and L.A., which is a good sort of feather to put in your cap or an app to put on your phone if you're here in the local metro area. So joining us once again for the second half of the hour to talk about the local, national, international app explosion are our guests, Kirk Hazensall, founder and president of RareWire, Aaron Slope, the CEO of Lantern, a company that makes an app based on location-based deals, finding location-based deals for small and medium-sized business merchants, and Jim Barnes, chief technology officer of Mobleco, a Sprint alum who went out on his own and started a mobile app company. And we'll be hearing about his company soon. Meanwhile, for all you mobile technology savvy listeners, chime in on why you think KC is the place to be the next wave of technological innovation, an enclave of technological brain just exploding all over the walls and sky and place like that.
It's very graphic.
Yeah, just all over the place. At KCURCST is our Twitter handle. We're following tweets and also taking email comments at centralstandard@kcur.org. Also, what makes a great mobile app? We want to put that out there as well. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. For any of you end users or developers out there, call in and tell us what makes a great mobile app. But first, we'll take a call from Bill in Olathe. Welcome to Central Standard, Bill.
Well, thank you. And my feet are not made of clay. I'm not stuck in the 1950s, but I don't see a cell phone for more than what it is, just a cell phone. This question is spurred by two things. Number one, we have Google moving into town, who is actually putting in landlines to go to houses. And I personally don't see any applicability in my life about having mobile technology all the time. Do any of these services translate over to the fixed station in the house on the computer? Or is that just going to be passe? Does the question make sense?
That's a good question from Bill. A lot of multimedia applications are happening in the home. Do these apps apply to fixed line locations.
Sure.
Or computers.
Sure. Well, in the case of Mobleco, again, we're a mobile solutions provider. I know we're predominantly talking about mobile applications today, but with our platform, we can actually deliver content across multiple channels. So with a single administrative tool, you can deliver content not only to a native app, but you could also deliver that content to a mobile device and to an online website, which might be a PC in a user's home or on a large screen. So in that case, I believe some of the things we are talking about and probably some of the stuff that all three of our companies offer would extend into the home.
Bill, I hope that answers your question. And Kirk wants to chime in on that too for you, Bill.
Yeah, I think tomorrow's a big announcement about Google offering their service, and a big part of that, I think everyone suspects, is that they're going to have a TV offering. So imagine I'll step back. There's also been a lot of talk that Apple is going to come out with a TV that they're going to start selling. So imagine taking the experience that has exploded in the app world on your phone and applying that to the TV in your home, where now people are going to be able to build apps that are video-based apps, streaming across this huge fiber that Google has implemented. You go buy a TV today, and there already are so-called smart TVs that come preloaded with apps. So if they take that to the next level and create a marketplace like iTunes where people can go build apps and publish their own TV show, I think that's coming right around the corner.
Are video apps experiencing growth at all? Do you see that area growing?
Yes.
I just look
at the iPhone 4S, you know, with now the video phone conferencing that you can do.
Kirk talked a little bit earlier about mobile web apps versus fixed web apps that you open up in a browser session. Can you refresh our listeners on the differences between those two apps and the architecture thereof for our listeners from your perspective?
Yeah, sure. So, again, if you're developing native apps, those that actually go into the markets, either the marketplace on Android or the iTunes market or the BlackBerry market, you're really developing to a specific language. So that developer has to have skill sets for that device to develop an app for that device, where if you're using something more like just a mobile website, then you can build it basically once and it can run across all of those devices. So, you know, there's more resources out there that know more of the HTML language. And again, you only need to write it once. So there's some benefits in that area. And at least what we see with our clients, in some cases, they do just go with mobile websites. We've got clients that have purely just said, I need a mobile website, lightweight version of my online website. We've got others that, you know, they still want the native apps. They still want to be in the iTunes market because that's where their competitors are.
Is it easy to put a mobile website, to push a mobile website through to an app?
Well, and you see that. There's hybrid apps. There's apps that are, you know, some of the pages are native and other pages are really mobile web views, if you will. You got to be careful, though, because, like, you know, Apple, for example, will frown on that if your predominant native app is nothing but mobile web. And they will reject those in their certification process.
Talk about the certification process. How do you get around that with your app development?
Well, and by the way, that's another thing that, you know, when the previous lady called and asked for help, I mean, you do have to be knowledgeable, especially with Apple, on their certification process. It's quite lengthy, their rules, and if you're not abiding by those rules, and even if you think you're abiding by those rules sometimes, they will reject your app, and you know, then you've got to go and try to go through the resolution of getting those issues that they've raised resolved and having them you know, ultimately approve your app. Normally, at least in our experience, now we've got a good reputation, us at Mobleco with Apple, is, you know, within 2 weeks we normally can have our apps approved. That also, I think, helps, is once you establish a relationship and you're kind of a known company out there working with Apple.
Aside from the obvious deterrent, something that conflicts with Apple's overall business vision, aside from that, what are some of the other common reasons that you can not get certified on an iPhone platform as an app developer?
Apple has an entire style guide.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, I don't know, 70 pages, 100 pages. that just defines kind of the style and the overall feel and user interface for what apps should be on Apple's platform. So
as you prepare to launch Lantern on the iPhone platform, what types of things are you thinking about? Are you going through that style guide with a fine-tooth comb?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to. It's one of those things that you kind of read it up front, understand the overall concepts in it, start designing from there, and then go back kind of through it and make sure that you haven't violated any of those things before you submit, because it's just, you know, it's something that'll save you a lot of time if you read and understand kind of the overall methodology and ideas that they want to put in their platform. So
going back to Jim Barnes, you have an interesting client roster there at Mobleco, which includes the Chiefs and Sporting KC. But one of the things that interested us here in preparation for this show at this radio station, AM 810, that you have a sports app for. How does that work?
Okay, so for the WHB 810 app, which is a sports station here in Kansas City, first and foremost, it allows you to stream audio on within the app. And secondly, and probably perhaps the more popular feature in many cases, is you can stream podcasts. I know personally I would listen to Todd Haley press conferences at night while walking because I missed it during the 3 o'clock hour.
Then you walk faster and get really mad.
Get all pumped up, right? So you've got the live stream, you got the podcast. I think the other really nice item for a radio station is we allowed several quick and easy ways for the listener to interact with the host. In the case of 810, there were three ways. One, they could quickly text the host. Secondly, they could call the host with a click-to-call capability on the app. And thirdly, they could send an instant message to the app or to the host. In that case, we just integrated with their instant messaging platform. So they had three conduits on the app itself to interface with the host.
I don't know if I want to create that many new ways for someone to get in contact with me, but
sure, come on, email and Twitter's not enough.
Let's go out on a limb here. Would you take a different approach for this station, this NPR member station, KCUR? How could this station best utilize a mobile app?
Well, I think first and foremost, the three things that I just mentioned, I think you could utilize. I'd like to go listen to the podcast of this show afterwards.
I bet you would.
But there's other things you could do. I mean, it's really a way to communicate, you know, with your listening audience. Again, whether you have, you know, ongoing events, you know, we do things like in-app push notifications. So let's say you had a listening audience of, you know, 5,000, 10,000 people that had this app. You could actually send notifications that would actually wake up the app. It can give them information. It can take them into the app to a specific page. You know, we support mobile deals. So if you had deals you wanted to alert them to because you had sponsors here at your radio station, we can do that. But I think it's really just that the ability to communicate and even market to your listening audience, again, in a mobile form factor, which means pretty much any time, any day, you can reach out to them.
Kirk Hazensaw, you pitched a magazine, The Atlantic Monthly and The Atlantic Online, and consolidated their content into a very streamlined and sleek app offering, if I do say so myself. How would you approach that from a radio station perspective?
Well, I think what Jim just said is very accurate. It's about being able to get the content out to your listeners and being able to communicate and market to them. So specifically on, he had mentioned push notifications. I think it's a new way to communicate to your customers. And it was mentioned earlier in the discussion about the old, like Groupon and the old ways of emailing people just don't work anymore. I don't know about you guys, but I don't go sign up anymore on sites and give them my email address just so I can get bombarded with emails about special offers. But with apps, there's this way where through push notifications, I can still follow what's going on with something I'm interested in without having to give up my identity, so to speak, where I have to give them my email address and things like that. So as an example, you could absolutely set the app up in such a way that sends out reminders that, hey, this is your favorite show. It's getting ready to start in 5 minutes. Make sure you click on and start listening or things like that. So there's endless possibilities when it comes to that I think would be a big benefit in using the power of push notifications to market to your customers.
I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on kcur.org, talking about the sort of hypothetical focus group pitch of an app here for KCUR and other radio stations and the way apps work and the app explosion that's taking place here in Kansas City, the app creation and development and design explosion that's taking here. Our guests are Kirk Hazensaw, founder and president of RareWire, who's done apps for The Atlantic and the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum, and Aaron Slope, the CEO of Lantern, a location-based deal with merchants app, and Jim Barnes, who's sort of all over the place at Mobleco as an app development and consultancy firm whose clients include Sporting KC and the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's talk a little bit about the industry, sort of a forward-looking breath of this conversation. We're staring in the face of an estimated 2 million apps in circulation. It's certainly a crowded space, but is it a profitable space yet? It looks a little bit like the web gold rush we saw in the late 1990s and early 2000s, where there was everybody and their mother.com, and everybody had a business model. Wasn't based on earnings, based on hype, based on the excitement around technology and the same sort of speculative nature of the gold rush. Tell us about the environment now and what might happen, starting with Jim.
Well, I think there's two things. I mean, certainly the app space does allow one to make revenue. There's no doubt about it, with whether it's, you know, the paid apps that are out there on the market today, the in-app purchasing that's becoming more and more prevalent. But there's also the service side of things that may not necessarily result in revenue, but it's just something a company needs to do. And at least at Mobleco, we have many clients that are really coming to us just from a service perspective. They're not necessarily looking to have their consumers download and pay for the app. It's just a service they want to provide. And certainly what we're seeing, and we really haven't talked about it much today, we focused a lot on the actual development of the physical app itself. But what Mobleco has found, especially as you start to move into medium and more larger type companies, is that we're finding out that the heavy lifting, especially to provide services either to your enterprise, your employees, your sales force, or to your consumers, is how do you take your existing data from your legacy IT systems and expose them in a way that can be consumed by the folks that are developing these applications? And that's not an easy thing.
A lot of people don't even really understand what you just said.
That's right.
moving from your old mainframe system or architecture to a more flexible, scalable, as they say in the industry.
Exactly. Right. And so at the heart of what we provide, and probably our number one offering, is really what we call our mobile services hub. It really is a server-side solution that basically allows one to easily integrate with legacy systems and expose that data as RESTful services so they can be easily consumed by any app developer. And with, like, even the chamber apps as an example, we've got over 60 chamber apps in the market. Kansas City has a chamber app. Lee Summit has a chamber app. Olathe has a chamber app.
You're referring to Chambers of Commerce.
Chambers of Commerce, right. That's right. They've all got apps that, you know, has a listing of their members, shows events for that chamber, shows news, ongoing news for those chambers. In all of those cases, we've used our hub to integrate with their existing data. The clients don't want to go to yet another system and duplicate data. So With the mobile services hub, we've got a very friendly, easy-to-use, pluggable architecture that allows us to plug into our client legacy systems and, again, bring forth that data in a very easy way to be consumed by applications. In most cases, Mobleco, we build the apps ourselves, but we've got a published API that actually would allow the client, if they had their own developers— application programming interface, that is correct. Or maybe they're using a tool to develop the app. We really don't care. But we've got a published set of services that would allow them to, you know, interface with our services hub to ultimately get to their legacy data. I know that was a lot, but—
That was a lot. And very inside baseball or inside— App ball?
Yeah.
I got nothing. What app categories, Kirk, as you chime in, have shown the most potential for revenue growth and ultimately profitability. You had something that you wanted to add based on that other architecture conversation.
But I think there's two ways to look at it. There's coming up with the million dollar idea where you go out and get this great idea and you build an app and put it in the app store and everybody goes and downloads it. And that opportunity is definitely out there, but it's difficult. I think there was a stat out that almost 70% of apps that are created make less than $5,000. And so it's not
in the totality
automatic.
Of their
yeah,
life.
It's not automatic and easy. But I think what Jim is talking about is really where the opportunity is for companies like his and mine is that companies using apps as another form of media to get content in front of their customers and or employees. So as an example, you can think about the savings involved in this. One of our bigger clients is CA Technologies, and they used to create sales and marketing collateral that they would spend a lot of money on, millions and millions of dollars, to print all these brochures up and get out to their sales collateral to their sales reps who would hand it out as collateral. Well, we turned that into an interactive iPad app where now their sales reps have iPads, they're out in the field, and they can share the app with a potential customer or do demos right in front of them that it's interactive, that includes video and audio and animations instead of just a static printed piece. And it saved them millions of dollars. So that's not an app where they put it out in the app store and they sell it for $4.99 and they're making $1 million, but it brings incredibly added value and there's a huge ROI on it for the cost savings they had on the print costs that they got rid of.
So. Yeah. I'll give you another example too, because we haven't talked about it. You know, everyone really thinks of apps as being consumer apps, but you're seeing a big push for enterprise apps. And there's a conference run by EFM. They do about 19 of these a year, and it's really for CIOs. And I've been fortunate enough to host mobile panels at these forums. And when you ask the audience, these are CIOs and executives in the IT space, why are you here? Are you building apps for your consumer base, or are you building apps for your employees, your sales folks? What you find, it's about a 50-50 split. So there's another opportunity out there for the listeners to think about enterprise applications and not necessarily consumer applications. And to Kirk's point, now there's an ROI. If you can build a killer app that allows a sales guy to go out and maybe increase his sales productivity or reduce costs on paper. I don't have a physical briefcase anymore. I've got this electronic app. There's a potential cost saving, which all IT companies are looking to save costs and increase, obviously, the productivity of, like, your sales team.
So you're saying business to business is a big growth area, and that makes sense. You know, for many businesses or enterprises, as they say, this is kind of a necessary capital expenditure. But what about a standalone consumer app company? You're obviously, Aaron Slope, going after consumers who patronize small and medium-sized businesses. How do you grow that? And how do you decide how to price your app in a crowded marketplace?
Yeah. So, first of all, ours is free. So to consumers, that kind of, we wanted to lower that barrier of entry for them. There are a lot of apps out there that, that charge money and that try to do, that business model that was pretty successful when the app markets were brand new. But I think as they get more crowded, that model is shrinking pretty rapidly. But I think ours is kind of unique because we have to grow two markets at the same time. We have to grow small and medium-sized business owners that want to offer, these deals and try to attract customers that way. And then we have to grow the user base that wants to go get those at the same time. So we kind of looked at it as, if we can offer it at a very low risk to these small and medium business owners, basically offering them where they don't have any monthly fees or sign-up fees and that they only pay for results, essentially, that we can go in there and say, hey, it's only a dollar for each person that we bring in or each party or each table that we help book at your restaurant and bring in. And so that's kind of how we've approached that. And so now we're going
out. So you're charging the merchants, essentially.
Correct. So
based on the results of the referrals or the deals that.
Yep. So it's basically a marketing tool that they can use to help attract people. And it works well for restaurants. It works well for small retail, entertainment, a lot of different venues like that. It works really well for them.
That requires beating the pavement, right?
Yeah, it
and
does.
That's what you're doing.
It does. I kind of chuckled a little bit when Kirk was talking about cold calling the Atlantic and all of these other big names, because That's a little bit of the world that I'm living right now, and just, you know, just cold calling people and trying to get our name out there, telling them what we're all about, and just asking people, hey, we're brand new. If you take a risk on us, we're going to go deliver and help you attract more customers.
Well, I think certainly all of the guests here today seem like a good example of people who really believe in the axiom, the worst thing that's going to happen is someone's going to say no.
Absolutely.
When the hype of mobile app Gold Rush dies down and the profitable players begin to step up and separate the men from the boys, so to speak, or the profitable companies from the sort of just also-rans in a very built-in obsolescence culture, what will the mobile space look like, Jim Barnes? Once the hype dies down, once the saturation dies down of apps.
From a consumer perspective?
From a 30,000-foot view. Enterprise apps, consumer apps, what does it look like?
Well, certainly I think you're just seeing a trend towards mobile devices, and period. And you've got to put the tablets in that space, which is, you know, where Kirk's at. You're finding, and I see it with my own kids, they don't even use their laptops anymore. And in many cases, they don't even need a tablet. They can be fully self-sufficient on that smartphone. So I think you're just going to see an ever-increasing dependency and usage of that smartphone, almost as if it was your laptop or your PC. And that's at least what I see. So I think that there will need to be the continued push for all companies of all sizes to make sure that they're leveraging mobile, to your point, in the way we used to, you know, we started leveraging the internet 15, 20 years ago.
You just heard the voice of Jim Barnes. He's the Chief Technology Officer of Mobleco. He, along with Kirk Hazensaw, founder and president of RareWire, and Aaron Slope, entrepreneur and CEO of an app company called Lantern. They were our guests here today talking about app creation and design and the trends that will be happening as the app creation and the design hysteria takes off. They're making waves here. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
If you want more information on this app show and the app show we did with the Computer Guys on Mondays about invasive apps and permissions, you can find both shows at kcur.org. We're also on iTunes, and you can podcast these broadcasts and listen to them on your mobile phones. And that's always a good thing. Meanwhile, tune in tomorrow with a look at the KC Youth Jazz Group and the initiatives that they are undertaking in the community and making music as they go. Today's show was produced by Tamika Weatherspoon. Our show is produced by Andrea Salinzi. Up to Date is next with a look at the myth of amateurism in college sports. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.